Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. An 11-mile underground oil pipeline near Santa Barbara burst last week, releasing more than 100,000 gallons of crude oil into the ocean and covering a 10-square-mile slick. The spill was first detected when a woman smelled fumes and reported them, after which the Coast Guard managed to stop the flow of oil. The pipeline is operated and owned by Plains All American Pipeline, which issued an apology and says it is working to excavate a broken section of the pipeline. Cleanup crews have been busy along the shore, sopping up oil-soaked water and sand. And the impact to wildlife has already been severe. The AP reports that, quote, 13 birds, mostly brown pelicans, and 8 marine mammals, including dolphins and sea lions, were found dead. The area that the spill occurred in is home to many species of wildlife, including whales. In 1969, an oil spill in the same area, which at that time was the largest ever such spill, helped to kickstart the local environmental movement. My guest is Rebecca Klassen. She is the Santa Barbara County organizer with Food and Water Watch, and she now joins us on the phone. Welcome to Uprising, Rebecca.
Hello there.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, can you tell us how many of the beaches have been impacted and which of the beaches specifically have been impacted?
There have been many beaches impacted all up and down the coastline. Our major state beaches, Refugio and El Capitan, are both heavily impacted, as well as many beaches that were usually accessed by locals just from highway pull-offs. And now folks down in Oxnard, Hermosa Beach, Redondo Beach are finding baseball and football-sized globs of oil washing up on their beaches. So it's pretty alarming the distance that this oil seems to be traveling.
Are such oil spills inevitable? I mean, that's a big question, because if we listen to the oil industry, line is generally that we, have strong regulations do voluntary work to make sure that they don't violate regulations and that they just minimize risk. But you can never minimize risk to zero.
I agree with that statement. I take my clues from the industry itself. If fossil fuel companies are including spills and the costs associated with cleanup in their own budgets, it seems that the industry itself thinks that it's not a question of if, but when we are going to see spills and explosions and various types of environmental disasters from this industry. In my opinion, the only safe place for oil in 2015 is under the ground. We have pipes leaking, oil trains derailing and catching fire, exploding around the country. There doesn't seem to be
offshore oil rigs exploding.
Yes, offshore rigs exploding. We now have, so this oil that is spilled is Exxon oil. 3 of the 4 rigs that feed this pipeline are owned by Exxon. The 4th rig has a lawsuit filed against it with the federal government about that rig, because they were caught fracking illegally and acidizing without proper environmental impact review. So the entire situation here is alarming. It's not just the fact that that one pipeline burst.
Now, in other spills, just to stay on this particular spill for a little longer before we go to the bigger picture, there's a story that often emerges that follows a bit of a script, that there was neglect by the company involved and that a government agency that was designated to watch and make sure that safety procedures were being followed didn't do its job. Is that the sort of story that's now unfolding in this case as well?
It does seem that this pipeline company was negligent. The pipeline inspection previous to the spill showed numerous anomalies, quote unquote, is what they're calling it, within the pipe, and those problems were not addressed. They just finished excavating the section of pipe yesterday, and they're sending it to their lab for a review and diagnosis.
Oh, so that piece of pipeline has been excavated now?
Just as of yesterday, I believe it's on its way to the lab. So we should know more details soon. But, you know, the nature of the oil we are bringing out of the ground right now, kind of post-peak oil, is heavier, it's more tar-like, and it requires a lot of dilutants or heavily corrosive chemicals to make this thick stuff flow through pipelines. So if I were Plains All American Pipeline, I might take issue with the fact that the material where they're responsible for transporting nowadays is more corrosive.
And I understand that essentially this was crude oil, as you said, diluted, being sent to refineries in California, but the pipeline itself was sort of operating at much lower capacity than it had been designed for, and that's partly because there's a major boom in fracking shale oil, particularly in California, and I know you're quite active on that, and your organization Food and Water Watch is as well. Does that industry also pose sort of longer term risks for the Santa Barbara and area and in general in California, because fracking doesn't necessarily, it's almost like a slow moving accident, or has the impact of a slow moving accident or spill, right?
Absolutely. The fracking industry found out to be injecting toxic wastewater through federally protected aquifers in Kern County, and hundreds of federally protected aquifers in California have now been found to have been injected with toxic wastewater from the oil industry, whether it be fracking or steam injection, which is considered to be pretty similar to fracking because they use injection pressures sometimes high enough to fracture surrounding rocks. In Santa Barbara, we definitely have a lot of this shale oil. Some people say we have more shale oil left in Santa Barbara County than any other county in the country or in the state, because we have been relatively environmentally progressive over the last 40 years after the 69 oil spill and have managed to leave a lot more of it in the ground. So my understanding is that oil companies have big plans for our area, and my attempt is to kind of head off that boom and to protect our local environment from the hazards and risks of the oil industry. And, you know, statewide, there have been over 600 oil and gas pipeline leaks, spills, and ruptures in California in the last 30 years.
Wow.
50 deaths, 200 injuries, and almost $800 million in damages.
Wow. Those are staggering statistics.
I would say this state has seen more than its fair share of oil-related disasters.
I mentioned earlier the 1969 spill, the specter of which sort of hangs over this current spill. Back then, 80,000 barrels of crude, at that time the worst such oil spill in history, that really helped to kick off in part the national environmental movement. Now, on this issue of the current spill, the one that just happened last week that we're talking about, in terms of the response by the pipeline company, in California senators, in fact, the two senators from California and other local lawmakers have been criticizing the response by the pipeline company. What sort of political actions are there?
Absolutely. So in our opinion, the response from the oil pipeline company has been slow. The spokesperson has been cavalier and the company obstructive even. They tried to deny our county supervisors access to the spill site. And it's very disappointing and infuriating that the public has been cut out of this process. We're not allowed into the press conferences. We don't feel like we have direct access to the information that we need. And community members are rising up. We've had 7 actions since the spill. Hundreds of people took to the street this past Sunday and marched up State Street with a mock pipeline, asking for more public access to the information that's being uncovered, as well as a public statement saying that they would not use dispersants on this bill, which we successfully got last Sunday, a public statement promising not to use dispersants. And we're also calling on our state leaders to put, specifically Governor Brown, to put an emergency moratorium on fracking and extreme forms of oil extraction in this state, given the fact that our infrastructure just cannot handle it.
I'm glad you brought up the issue of dispersants. BP oil spill in the Gulf Coast region was one where a specific chemical dispersant called Core Exit was widely used, and many scientists suggested and studies suggested that it essentially helped to disappear the oil rather than clean it up. It literally dispersed it and made it spread further, and also probably helped BP shirk some responsibility. So how important is it to prevent the use of dispersant in this particular case of the Santa Barbara spill?
We consider it absolutely critical that we avoid or we not allow them to use dispersants in our channel or anywhere for that matter. The dispersants, unfortunately, were used in the BP spill before the full ramifications were understood, but the human health impacts have been ongoing and severe, and it's made true environmental remediation way more difficult because of, like you said, it causes the oil to split up into smaller particles and disperse throughout the water column instead of globbing together so that we can pull it out more easily.
So what means...
Already here we're seeing that this cleanup is going to take months, if not years. Friends of mine are divers, and they've been going down and seeing the kelp forest just covered in oil, huge globs of oil.
Right, because the cleanup has been focused on the sand, and it's easy to scoop up, or relatively easy to scoop up, you know, using shovels, oil that globs onto sand. But what about the oil at the bottom of the on the floor of the ocean?
True, right. That's the true tragedy. I mean, the kelp forests that provide habitat for numerous species are going to suffer long term from this oil spill.
What about the...
And you brought up a good point about the oil on the sand is easy to clean up when it's there. I was there the first day, 3 hours after the spill, and the beach was just covered. Miles and miles of beach were covered in thick, you know, yards of oil, and nobody cleaned it up the first at least 12 hours. I was there the following morning, and the beach looked much cleaner, and I asked the reporters who had been there overnight, and they said, nobody came to clean this up. It was the high tide that came up and pulled all the oil back up to sea. That's heartbreaking.
So literally the water sucked the oil back into it. Obviously, there are tides.
Yeah, the waves pulled the oil back out.
And that should have been predictable. That should have been something, obviously, that the company in question should have known to expect.
Yep. We should have had a plan to have a massive engagement to clean up that oil as soon as it hit the shores.
So, Rebecca, what about the impact to Santa Barbara's tourism industry, to the local seafood industry? A lot of small businesses get impacted this way.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's one of our major concerns. There's a moratorium on all fishing and extraction from the seas for food purposes. The tourist industry suffered immensely over Memorial Day weekend. A lot of sea adventure companies had many cancellations, as well as our local hotels and general tourist industry is definitely suffering and scared about the ongoing problems they're going to be facing.
Now, one of the questions that comes up, I think, in my research and thinking about this, Santa Barbara is one of the wealthier communities in California, and often we see environmental accidents happening in poor parts of the country with high racial and ethnic diversity, and Santa Barbarans who may have more political clout, more economic clout, more racial privilege, how are they, compared to the average Californian, you think, going to be able to use that clout to essentially prevent this from continuing in their part of the state?
Yeah, I mean, people with a lot of resources tend to choose to live here, and largely because of the beautiful environment and the wonderful climate that we enjoy, I think there will be, you know, our elected officials know that Santa Barbara County priorities are largely environmental. We depend a lot on our wine industry, tourist industry, and I think that the power that we're building here, not only among the more wealthy individuals, but also the student population and just the general public, you know, we're building a lot of power here. People are very upset and want to see something done, not only for Santa Barbara County, but for the rest of the state and world, quite frankly. There's a lot of, a level of consciousness that leads people to think about the global picture here in Santa Barbara.
Finally, this spill came at a time when there is heightened activism around the oil industry. The Shell oil has been targeted for drilling in the Arctic with some very creative political activism. Campus activism on divestment from fossil fuels has ramped up. There was just a story about Norway and divestment from the coal industry. Are you hopeful that there are more and more people working to stop the fossil fuel industry in its tracks?
Definitely. I think, while all oil spills are horrible, oil spills that reach our oceans are more viscerally, they induce a more visceral response for some reason. And I think people are just outraged and once again reminded that this is a dangerous industry, a rogue industry in many cases that needs to be reined in. And because we have the technologies needed to create a 100% renewable energy future, we have those the capital to do it, there really are no excuses for not moving beyond fossil fuels right now. And I'm very excited to be working with students at UCSB, highly involved in the divestment efforts. They had a march yesterday protesting the oil spill and also urging the UC system to divest from fossil fuels, as many universities around the country are already doing.
So Rebecca, what needs to be done in the short term on the spill that we've been discussing? We talked about long term and the plans that that you and others at Food and Water Watch have to call for a moratorium and the pressure on Jerry Brown. But in the short term, what needs to happen to clean the spill up as best as possible?
Unfortunately, it seems like it's too late to do the most effective type of cleanup. It would have been most effective to get to it right away, first night that the oil was on the beach. Mm. Now we're seeing gobs of it down in Oxnard and Hermosa Beach. It's going to take a massive effort to clean this stuff up. So volunteers are currently being trained to be able to handle this oil safely. We're going to need, hundreds of sustained volunteers to get this oil spill under control.
And can our California audience and, of course, our listeners and members of our audience throughout California join in this effort?
Yes, absolutely. I can send you the web address later, or you can direct people to End Oil Now Facebook page. That group is coordinating volunteers.
That's
the cleanup effort.
That's End Oil Now. And there's also a Food and Water Watch website?
Absolutely. Food and Water Watch California Facebook page is probably the easiest way to get a hold of me and other volunteer coordinators. We're also having a major event this Sunday at De La Guerra Plaza at 1 p.m., which is our city hall. And people around the state are more than welcome to engage if they feel as outraged as we do about this spill.
And that is this Sunday. The website's Food and Water Watch's website is fwwatch.org. And there's also Facebook pages that people can search for Food and Water Watch, as well as End Oil Now. Rebecca, thank you so much for joining us. Best of luck to you.
Thank you for having me. Thanks so much for your coverage.
Rebecca Klassen is the Santa Barbara County Organizer with Food and Water Watch.